Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 250 of the Last Round, a quarter of episodes, at least the standard episodes. We obviously have more than that, but the weekly review and preview shows, we are at 250, a quarter to what, 1,000? We are a little bit closer, obviously, if you combine all the bonus and all the other short episodes that we have in terms of content, but 250 episodes since 2018, and we are still going. We apologize that we've been a little bit absent the last month or so, but we're back. We're back here to give you the news, notes, analysis, and all that, reviews, previews, and we're going to touch on some of the fights and some of the news that happened within the last couple weeks as well, just to kind of get you up to speed and get us back up to speed. So jumping right back into it, fight reviews Saturday, the 21st of October, so a couple weeks ago, from the Kia Forum in Inglewood, California, on DAZN in Los Angeles, California, in a, man, what I saw, we were talking about maybe a man versus boy. It was a surprising beating. Giovanni Santillan remains undefeated at 32-0 with a 6-round knockout over Alexis Rocha, who takes the second loss of his professional career. This was for the WBO, NABO, welterweight titles. Santillan, obviously, is with Top Rank. He started with Thompson's Boxing, and now with Top Rank. He's been on the show before. And then, obviously, a close friend of the show, Alexis Rocha, Lex. He's been on the show multiple times. We had talked about, I think, when they made this fight, we had talked about that we were fans of this fight, and there was a lot of people, the hardcore boxing community, who said that they liked this fight. I was a fan of this fight. I thought both of these fighters were at similar points in their careers, and they needed that fight. And like we've seen before, the welterweight division isn't exactly, one of those divisions that shares their fighters crossing promotional lines, especially the last several years or so. So I think that this was an ideal matchup for both of them. Lex was ranked higher than Santillan. He was a WBO mandatory. But with Spence and Crawford tied up with all the belts and them trying to make the rematch and seeing what has to be done, whether it's at 147 or 154, Rocha and Santillan, with Rocha being with Golden Boy and Santillan being with Top Rank, they didn't really have too many options, right? I mean, you have PBC guys, but it was highly unlikely we were going to see any cross promotional fights with PBC and Golden Boy and Top Rank. So Top Rank and Golden Boy, De La Hoya and Bob Arum, seemingly get along enough where they made their own deal here. And I thought it was the appropriate fight. And I know some people criticized it. I know past guest of the show, Robert Diaz, former matchmaker for Golden Boy Promotions, criticized it. I disagree with him, and I thought that it was an appropriate fight for both of them. And Santillan came to fight, man. He really showed that he prepared for this fight and just took it to Lex and just dominated him. What'd you think?
Going into the fight, I thought Rocha was gonna take it. I just thought he had more ways to win. I thought we'd seen him in some better fights, some good performances, because I thought Santillan's last few performances weren't that great. I remember he had a fight down in like San Diego where he went like several rounds with a kind of like an unknown type of guy, and it wasn't his best performance. But yeah, he turned up on the night and really took it to Lex. And I don't know whether it's because it looked like he maybe broke Lex's nose quite early on in the fight, and maybe that affected Lex, you know, like his breathing and stuff like that. And I know some people were saying Lex didn't look too good on the scales day before at the weigh-in, and he did look like a little bit soft, like maybe he'd, you know, tried to rehydrate and stuff like that to, and it hadn't gone too well. It didn't look like his normal big type of self on the night, but taking nothing away from Santillan, breakout performance for me. And it sounds kind of odd, right, with how many fights he's had, but that's definitely the going in, headlining at the Kia Forum, coming in as the away guy, really, on a Golden Boy show. Unbelievable performance from him. And, you know, let's go, hope going forward he can get himself some big fights. And Lex is good enough and young enough that he can rebuild and come back. And it's funny how, you know, as fans, we criticize when fighters are in with, you know, fighters where you kind of blow them away. Yet when we put two kind of like hungry guys still coming up the ladder that didn't have anywhere else to go, we criticize that as well. You know, it was a good fight, unbelievable fight. I think everyone loved it. You know, kind of the underdog ended up winning, and we still criticized it. And I know some people like Roberto Diaz, like you said, he was saying he criticized it because there was nothing on the line. He thought there should have been some type of belt on the line. I get that. I can kind of understand that. But at the same time, like you said, is the division is held up. You know, what are they going to do? They didn't really have elsewhere to go. If you look right at the last few performances from both guys, they haven't really fought like that many big names of note because, you know, Crawford and Errol Spence have had the 147 division really on hold for the last 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, something like that. So, you know, they had to go somewhere, and, you know, Giovanni was successful on the night, and, you know, be interested to see where he goes next.
Absolutely. And like I said, you shared the same opinion and that I had mentioned, where are these fighters going to go at 147 pounds, you know? And I picked Lex to win too, but these guys have been sparring partners in the past, and they both said it in the lead up to the fight and the interviews and all that. So I thought, okay, well, Santillan is already known. I mean, they're both Southern California guys, same weight division. They've sparred each other, so their familiarity with each other is a lot more in depth than they would know other fighters from, you know, let's just say welterweights who live across the country here in the United States or something like that. So I agree with you. I thought Lex was going to pull it out, but I didn't think Santillan was not going to have moments. I thought, okay, well, I thought a big X factor, like I mentioned, was them knowing each other. They've sparred with each other. They've seen each other. They both fight out of the Southern California scene. So they're around all the gyms. You know, Santillan was preparing for this fight by traveling a couple days a week from San Diego to Riverside, California, to Robert Garcia's gym at the Robert Garcia Boxing Academy, and getting some work done there. And then having Robert Garcia in his corner on fight night. And we had talked about how Rocha also has gone there for sparring. I don't know how often he was going there, but he would go to spar with the Garcia guys, and he would go there a couple times. I don't know how consistent it was, or if he was still doing it, or if it was just when Robert Garcia would need sparring at a welterweight division area, he would call Lex, since Lex is obviously in Southern California. But Santillan was going a couple times a week from San Diego to Riverside to train Robert Garcia and get the work up there. And I didn't know that until I saw Robert Garcia on fight night. You know, cause I saw like video and clips of the press conference and all that, but I didn't see Robert Garcia. I just wasn't paying attention, but until fight night. And that's when I thought, oh wow, that means he's been getting some really good work. But I didn't expect Santillan to just come through and bulldoze Alexis Rocha like that. He literally just, it made it seem like if you had Terrence Crawford fight, you know, who's a lower card welterweight guy right now. I don't know. Yeah. If you had Terrence Crawford fight like a, I don't even know, but even just think about mentioning Terrence Crawford. Just think about this. Like, what if when Crawford made the Spence fight, he had showed up to the Golden Boy offices in LA, on the fight week that Alexis Rocha was going to fight at the YouTube Theater in Inglewood, right there across the street from the Kia Forum. And then there was rumors and that Crawford went to go talk to Golden Boy to see if he can make a fight with Rocha because he didn't know if the Spence fight was going to materialize. Just imagine, like, I would have picked Crawford on that fight as well. I think everybody would have. But, you know, Rocha was trying to get a title shot. But, you know, it, just imagine if he would have went in there with Crawford. I don't think he was ready for that step. But I think, like, as we said, as we mentioned multiple times, I know we keep repeating ourselves, Santillan was the appropriate opponent for Rocha. And Rocha was the appropriate opponent for Santillan. The only thing that there was an obstacle was they were on different networks with different promoters. But they were able to make that deal, and Santillan came out on top. And we had talked about offline where Santillan, like, there was a moment where he threw like four left hooks in a row against Rocha. Just literally just 1, 2, 3, 4. And you never really see that. You never really see that at the professional rankings, especially at high levels like that. But the fact that Alexis Rocha just took those shots, just back to back to back to back, means that he was not having it anymore. He did not, you know, he was not in his moment anymore. And the referee, I believe, was Ray Corona, right? Ray Corona was the referee, and I think he appropriately and perfectly called it off because he's like, no, this is over. This is over. And congratulations to Santillan. You know, hopefully we can get him on to talk about his win and his future. I know he's been on before, so hopefully he comes on again. Lex is always welcome here. He's been on multiple times, one of our most recurring guests. And I give a lot of praise to Alexis Rocha for coming out for the post-fight press conference after the fight. Because, you know, that was obviously an emotional defeat. Nobody likes to lose, especially at this high level. But he still came out for the post-fight press conference and talked to the media. That's you got to give him a ton of credit for that, man, because I don't think anybody would have blamed him if he didn't come out. But he showed professionalism and a lot of courage and all that to come out for the post-fight press conference. So, yeah, man. Where do you think Santillan goes from here? Like, what do you think should be next for him? But what do you think realistically will be next? And then same question for Rocha. What do you think?
I mean, after that performance, you'd think that he's going to probably wait around, if it doesn't take too long, to see what's happening with Crawford and Spence. Because how long ago was that fight? And we don't know. Is Terence Crawford and Spence, are they activating the rematch? Are they moving up? You know, we're still kind of like stood in the middle of nowhere right now, you know, holding up that whole division again. If I was Santillan, say if Terence Crawford and Spence do a rematch, if I was Santillan, what, maybe fight someone like a Mario Barrios, a Cody Crowley, you know, both guys are, you know, highly ranked. If not, then the belts are going to get fragmented and he's going to be mandatory with somebody for the WBO. I think it's Cody Crowley is the next in line. So it would be Santillan against Cody Crowley. And I think he has a very, very, very good chance in that fight, which could see him end up being, you know, a world champion. After all this time, you know, we watched him coming up through Thompson's boxing. And I think the change to Robert Garcia has definitely brought out a lot more aggression in him, a lot more power. He seems to definitely have more of a stereotypical, I guess, you know, Mexican style now, you know, from going to that type of gym. He's very, and this isn't like, this isn't a negative part, but he doesn't do like anything brilliant, but he does the basics very, very, very well. And that's all that you need.
He's effective.
Yeah, he really is. You know, he keeps his hands up. Everything that he does really well. He's very good at, you know, throwing combinations. He knows how to cut off the ring. He just does everything, like all the basics, super, super well. And with that added little bit from Robert Garcia, that added aggression, you know, kind of putting people on the back foot, I think that's taking him to another level.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'd definitely be surprised if he doesn't continue with Robert Garcia and his team. You know, it's like, think about it like this, like Teofimo Lopez, when he beat Lomachenko, he had a nutritionist, you know, he had, there was a lot of things that he added for that Lomachenko fight, which made, that's why he got the win. He looked great. And he did what he had to do. And then when he lost to Kambosos, I remember, and this was the top ranked people on the broadcast saying it, you know, he didn't have the nutritionist. He pretty much didn't have the same team in place again that he had for the Lomachenko fight. You would think that, and you know, I know it was expensive, you know, and he was trying to make his money and he was moving his way up the ranks and stuff like that. And I understand that, but you would think that, okay, once you kind of get into that rhythm and you see, man, that was my best performance. In order to stay at that level and to go up from there, I would have to keep that same regimen going forward in the professional rankings like this. You know, I'm a high level fighter. So I hope Giovanni Santillan figures it out and stays with Robert Garcia and stays around his team, because, you know, Robert Garcia has obviously showed that he's effective. He's an effective trainer. He's had some legendary fighters, and he's proven that his guys can win, man. So, and for Rocha, you know, Rocha's, I think, trainer Hector Lopez, you know, they've obviously been together for a long time right there out of Santa Ana, California, and Orange County, California. What do you think about that? Do you think that Rocha's, like, obviously, Hector Lopez has gotten Rocha to this level, but do you think that maybe Rocha, like, look at Santillan, like, he had his trainer, I think, from San Diego area, but he realized, like, hey, you know, I need somebody else who's more experienced, or somebody to join the team at least, and he went with, you know, world-renowned Robert Garcia, who's been around some of the biggest fights in the world. Do you think Rocha maybe needs to do something like that?
I think at times it's good just to get, like, another look, right? Because fresh pair of eyes, maybe they can see something different. You know, it's like if you write a report, I don't see the mistakes. I give it to you. You read it and you're like, hey, you've made a mistake here, here, and here. And it's kind of like that, I guess, as coaching, right? You know, see something different, different way of coaching as well. I think it could be good, you know, maybe to have someone else on board, but, you know, knowing the team, like Lex won't, I would be very, very surprised.
No, yeah, he's a loyal guy. And
yeah, I don't think he would. Yeah. But, you know, just going into somewhere like Robert Garcia, like he does, and getting all that sparring stuff, I think could and should, you know, help him come on. And, you know, with this loss, I'm sure they'll go back and they'll look at things and maybe they'll see some things that, you know, they didn't see before, some, like, you know, chinks in the armor as such, you know, that they need to work on to get to that next level. So he's still super young. He's got a lot of time left in the sport. So, you know, he's got a lot of time to go away, come back and rebuild.
Do you think we see this rematch by the end of next year? I feel Rocha's the type of guy to, he might have a fight or two in between, maybe in the first 6 months of next year. I feel like Rocha would be like, hey, now put me back in there. You know, I don't know if Golden Boy would want to put him back in there with him, but I don't know. I just feel like Rocha should insist on telling Golden Boy, like, nah, man, put me back in there with him. Like, give me some comeback fights, one or two, and put me back in there with him. You know, like, assuming that Spencer Crawford still, for some reason or another, and I'd be surprised, still have the belts tied up. I mean, what do you think? Would he do that? Should he do that?
I think kind of like what Robert Diaz was saying. I think next time it needs to be for something. I think it was that good a fight that maybe, you know, if Santillan goes on, picks up the WBO, Rocha works his way up to, like, mandatory, I think we'd see it.
Right.
I think it's that big a fight and it would be that good. I think the fight was that good the first time with, like, the knockdowns and, you know, Lex just being covered in blood and not giving up and just showing like how much of a warrior he is, just keeps coming forward. I think people would want to see it. Especially in, you know, the Southern California area, they're fairly big names in this area, right? So I think it would do good numbers. So, you know, next time, you know, make sure there's something on the line, you know, like a world title of sorts or, you know, some type of trinket.
Yeah. I think that's appropriate. Also on that card, John Scrappy Ramirez remains undefeated at 13-0 with the fourth round KO over Ronald Batista, who takes the fourth loss of his career. Scrappy Ramirez, he has a personality, man. Some people hate it, some people don't, but he at least has some type of bravado on camera and in his interviews. Obviously, we've seen this before, and sometimes it doesn't pan out. I mean, it's hard to pan out at the highest level like this, but, you know, I think as a promoter for Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy, you always need those guys who have those personalities, right? So, you know, he's undefeated right now, and so far, so good. You know, I think it's still early to tell, like, how he's going to be in the future, in the long term, but, you know, if he pans out and he has the personality that he has on camera and the media, that just means a little bit better marketing and more dollar signs if he can keep winning, right?
No, 100%. You know, he's what you want as a promoter, right? You know, he comes out to music. You know, they had those two guys singing like some sort of like remix version of like Michael Jackson's Beat It. You know, you had the crowd going, lots of fans, obviously sells a lot of tickets. And he does the performances, you know, gets the knockout win, right? What more do you want? He comes in singing, dancing, stuff like that, gets the crowd going, goes in there very smooth, very calm, very collected, picks his shots, gets a knockout, you know, does all those viral things that you want. And I'm sure they're going to probably keep him picking the right sort of matchmaking to get him these knockouts, you know, to build him up to, you know, a world title shot, because, you know, he's selling those tickets. He's putting bums in seats. So, yeah, he's doing everything the right way so far.
Moving on to this past Saturday, the 28th of October, from the Boulevard Hall in Saudi Arabia, Riyadh, that's what he said. Saudi Arabia on ESPN Plus pay-per-view in the United States and DAZN pay-per-view around the world, excluding the United States, the UK, and all that, I believe, Ireland. Tyson Fury. Some people might be upset that we're talking about this because I know there's criticism and all that, but it is the heavyweight champion of the world. And what, the day before, this was sanctioned by the British Boxing Board of Control as an actual fight to count on the record. So I thought that was, I don't know. I thought maybe there was some fishy stuff going on behind the scenes, but Tyson Fury gets the split decision win over the former UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou in his first formal boxing match. Fury wins by scores of 95-94, 96-93, and then Ngannou, I think, got one score of 94-95 or 95-94, however you want to say it. Fury was down once by, like, it looks like a shot to, like, the left side temple. It didn't look like that hard, but it did hit him, like, in the temple area, which maybe kind of knocked his equilibrium. I'm going to tell you right now, I didn't watch this. I saw the clips and all that. I saw all the people who were there. You know, they had Vince McMahon from the WWE there with The Undertaker. They had Cristiano Ronaldo, arguably the most famous athlete in the world. A bunch of legendary boxing fighters. Mike Tyson, Oscar De La Hoya, Manny Pacquiao. Before we touch on this fight and whatever it means, how much money do you think Saudi Arabia spent on paying all those people to go to that event?
Oh, the event in total must have cost them, what, $100 million?
You think so?
Well, I think Fury's purse was $50 or $60 million. And then I think Ngannou supposedly got like around a set fee of at least $10 million, and then putting on the event and paying all those people and all the private planes and stuff like that. I'm sure it must be close to like $100 million just for that, just for that one event. All the singers, Eminem was there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was insane, man. Like, and as soon as I saw Vince McMahon there, him and The Undertaker, and then they actually gave an interview to, I think it was a USA Today or something like that, like on the little red carpet or whatever they had there. I was like, wow. I was like, there's no way that guy just showed up by himself like that. Like, look, man, whether people criticize that they paid or not, you can't tell me that some of these influencer cards that we've seen on across these platforms like DAZN and all that stuff, you can't tell me some of these influencer cards who were there or influencers who are there or people who are there in attendance sometimes aren't paid. That's just it's the marketing. And it obviously helped the promotion because people were talking about it. The wrestling community, the professional wrestling community was talking about it because not only has Tyson Fury been involved with the WWE last couple of years or so, but you have Vince McMahon, who's one of the guy's most polarizing figures, you know, you probably in business, not even in the wrestling circles, in business, who is at this event and actually gives some type of interview when you never hear from the guy like that. So they had the professional wrestling community talking, and then you had the football soccer community talking, and in general the sports world talking, because you had Cristiano Ronaldo and you had some other athletes there. You had Eminem there, a bunch of legendary boxing fighters. Literally, there was like a picture of them. I don't even know how. It was Roberto Duran, De La Hoya, Manny Pacquiao, Mike Tyson, Eric Morales. You know, all these guys were all there. Ricky Hatton. I mean, they call it sports washing, right? That the country's been trying to do. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't. I mean, who knows? Yeah, that's all stuff that it is what it is. People can complain about it or not, but obviously these sports are going over there. They're going over there to get the money because they see that these countries, Abu Dhabi, Saudi Arabia, they have an open checkbook right now, a blank check. They're like, hey, come over here. You know, we'll pay you all this money to come over here. And boxing's been over there now. MMA's been over there now. Golf. You know, golf jumped in, and then the PGA Tour, which is the biggest golf company in the world, realized that, hey, these guys are going to really compete because they got a ton of money over there. So they combined with them. The PGA Tour, and they combined with, I think, LIV Golf, which started over there, because they realized, like, we're not going to be able to beat these guys, so let's just merge with them. I mean, you know, and then you got Ronaldo, who plays over there. What can you really say? What can you really say? You know, I mean, what do you think? What's your take on this whole situation?
Well, like you said, it's just money attracts, right? So people are going to go there, especially, you know, if you're a sportsman and you haven't made that life-changing money where you can turn down that type of, those type of paydays. You know, if you're Cristiano Ronaldo, you can turn down this, you know, that type of money, but you know, some of these boxers can. Some of these are the big checks that these guys are going to be able to, you know, use to help them and their family, you know, later in life. So it's hard for them to turn down that sort of money when, and obviously people are against it all. It seems to have died down a little bit because, like you said, everyone's going out there, WWE, Formula One, tennis, UFC, boxing. So it seems to have disappeared a little bit onto the back burner, all the media kind of going against it with the sports washing and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to happen, unfortunately. I don't see it's not going to stop, you know, the amount of money that they've got. Unfortunately, money makes the world go round, right?
What do you think about Ngannou and his performance, I guess, you know, and that this fight was actually sanctioned like 24 hours before by the British Boxing Board of Control as an official fight on their records when it wasn't up until a day before?
It's kind of, I mean, after watching Las Vegas do it for Mayweather and McGregor, kind of wasn't too surprised. You could see that they're probably going to try to get somebody to do it. Pardon me. I thought Fury was going to pick a round to do it. I thought it was going to be similar to Mayweather McGregor, you know, where Mayweather just carried him because it was an exhibition, kind of waited for McGregor to get tired and then just jumped on him and knocked him out. I thought it was going to be pretty much exactly the same. I thought Fury would have toyed with him, kind of showed off to the crowd. You know, eventually Ungarnu would have got tired, but just because of how big he is, you know, just being that big and muscular and trying to hold your arms up and stuff like that, I thought he would have tired, and then Fury would have just, you know, kind of taken him out there. So, yeah, the performance that he put on was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. To be a pro, you know, going in as a professional boxer for the very first time, to go in there against the best heavyweight in the world and to do what he did was absolutely outstanding. You know, looking at, you know, Fury's body, looking at his figure, it looks like he didn't take training camp seriously. He probably did a few rounds here and there, but I'm sure it's not the same sort of training camp that he would have fighting Usyk. He came in at an all-time heavy, and I know it was only like a pound or so heavier than when he fought Wilder the second time. But if you look at the figure, if you look at his gut, it was weight in a different way. You know, it wasn't like it was muscle. It was like it was just a beer belly. You know, instead, you know, there's a complete difference. You know, when you look at like the figure and the weight, it looked different, I thought, this time around. And he obviously took him too lightly, thinking that like, okay, like this dude's a pro, I'm the best in the world, this is going to be easy. And it wasn't. And he probably could have lost on points, to be honest with you. I think I probably had Ngannou winning it by a round. It looks like,
really?
Because of the knockdown. If you look at some of the rounds, I thought Ngannou probably won it by maybe a round. I wouldn't say Fury by a round and Ngannou by a round, I think would probably be the right way, because they were so hard to score, because some of the rounds he hardly threw anything. And then sometimes you'd like Ngannou would maybe like land like one big punch, but then Fury would kind of dominate the round with his jab. And it's such a hard way to score, because boxing doesn't really have like a full set of rules. Like, this is how you score a fight. Okay, we have a guideline given out by the WBC, but they're a sanctioning body. That's not an official, that's just their guideline. That's not given out by, like, you know, the ABC, or, you know, like there isn't like one governing body in the US or across the world to say like, hey, this is how you score boxing. So it was kind of hard to score, because the limited amount of work that you had at times, there was like rounds where I think they'd land like six punches each, stuff like that. So it's like, how do you really score a round like that? But yeah, it was unbelievable performance from Ngannou, and he definitely guaranteed himself another payday. And off that performance, I think he'd maybe even beat AJ. AJ's not got as good a chin as Tyson Fury has. The Wilder fight would be interesting, because Wilder just has that one weapon to knock people out. But if you look at the chin that he's had in MMA, kickboxing, and his boxing performance against Fury, Fury several times landed pretty flush. And Ngannou fucking wasn't really phased at all. He has some hell of a chin on him.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say that as well. And Mauricio Sulaiman, the president of the WBC, has said that, did he say that he was going to enter the rankings into the top 10, or he's debating it? He said he was, right?
Yeah, he was. I could put it on the news and notes at the bottom.
Right. I brought it up here since we're already talking about it. He said that he will recommend Francis Ngannou will enter the rankings after his fight against Tyson Fury. Sulaiman had said that he was impressed by how Ngannou, you know, fought against Tyson Fury. I mean, what do you think about this? I don't know if he'll enter the top 10 or whatever. It's just maybe just the rankings in an official capacity. But do you think this is appropriate? I mean, if I was those top 10 heavyweights and stuff like that, like Wilder, you said, AJ, Ruiz or whoever, Joe Parker, or any of these guys, I think if I was them, I'd be like, yeah, put him in the rankings. Like, even coming off a loss, like, they can make some money with this guy. And they would still be probably favored.
Look at it two different ways, I guess. The WBC are doing it because they know that he's going to make money. People are going to be even more interested now. You're going to get the boxing fans that thought he won, and you're also going to get the MMA fans that remember him from the UFC are going to tune in and stuff like that. Obviously, he's going to have a legion of fans from Africa as well because of the things that he's doing. But then also, if you're a fighter in the WBC's top 10 or top 15, whatever they put him in, and then you lose out, you lose your ranking, you get pushed out of the top 10 or the top 15 to somebody that's actually 0-1, you've got to think he didn't actually win, that he actually lost, right? If we're being, because that's what happened. If you look at BoxRec, he's 0-1.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've actually moved him up in the rankings. They're going to put him in the top 10 or top 15. So you've got to look at it like, have they done that to other people before? I very much doubt it. Normally, you have to win to go up in the rankings. So, you know, the WBC are doing it because they want their percentage, because they know that the fights that he's going to be in are going to be huge purses. And
right,
they want their cut. If we're being completely right. honest, Mauricio Sinnerman doesn't miss anything. Every time there's a boxing fight, there's some type of WBC trinket, because that fight wasn't for, you know, Tyson Fury's WBC belt, but he won a WBC Riyadh title or something like that. You know what I mean? Every time there's any type of event, Mauricio Sinnerman is there, you know, handed out some type of belt. So that's the reason they're doing it. That's the only reason they're doing it, is because they want their percentage of his future fights.
And then Fury, the good thing about this is that a couple weeks ago, maybe the week before, a Fury Usyk fight was actually announced as official, that, hey, we signed contracts, we will be fighting. The planned date was for the end of December. Who knows if that's going to happen? I don't think it's going to happen. I always thought it was too soon, you know, because they could build up to this fight. I think it'll be the first quarter of next year. I'd be surprised if it is at the end of December, but you know, I gave a lot of credit to Fury, because I don't think anybody expected that, right? Did you expect that when you saw that news? Because I thought, okay, he's going to go into to this Ngannou fight and do his thing. And then there's going to be maybe like 6 months of going back and forth in the media between Fury and Usyk and his team and both of their teams. And then maybe we'll see it next summer or the end of next year or something like that. I just thought, just based on Fury's personality and all that, but I think he satisfied a lot of not just obviously the hardcore boxing fan base, but you know, the casual boxing fans, even just general sports fans, that it showed that sector of fanatics that, hey, look, I'm going to do this fight, which up until the day before was an exhibition, Saudi Arabia, get my check, get my purse, you know, have this big event, get some publicity, and then, but I'm still going to fight for the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world within a couple months, and it's already official. So yeah, you guys, you know, I'm doing this, you don't have to be so mad at me, because I'm going to have a real fight in like 2-3 months. I mean, I give him a ton of credit for that, because I didn't expect that this so soon. Because you know how Fury is. You know, he says he retires, and then he goes here, and then he says one thing, and then he says he masturbates 10 times a day during training camp and all that. I gave him a ton of credit for that. I mean, what did you think? Are they going to fight in December?
Going off the interviews after the event, no, because I saw Frank Warren said that, you know, it was supposed to be December 23rd, but he now thinks that Tyson needs a rest. And then Tyson did an interview with Boxing King Media after the event, and he pretty much said like, hey, I'll see you in, you know, January, February time. So yeah, after those two interviews, it looks like the December 23rd event is off. I was dumb enough to believe that it would go ahead, because I thought this fight was going to be a glorified sparring session. So I thought Fury would have got out of here full faculties, hardly any scratches, and then this was pretty much just like a little warm-up to the Usyk event. And I think I'm probably in the same camp as a lot of people that thought that it was going to be super, super easy for Fury. So, yeah, it shows how much I know, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. If we lived in a state that legalized sports gambling, I would have put some money on Ngannou too. Obviously, he was a huge underdog. But I would have put some money on him too, just be like, hey, if he wins, you win big. I mean, if you lose, then you lose $100 or something like that. Yeah, I would have did it, man. I would have did it, but it is what it is. Also on that card, Fabio Worley remains undefeated at 17-0 with a TKO in the seventh round over David Adelaide. who takes the first loss of his career. This is for the British and Commonwealth and WBO European Heavyweight Championship. These two have been kind of circling each other for a little bit, right? And now they finally fought, and Wardley came out on top, right?
Yeah, good fight. A lot of spite going into the fight after the they had that altercation on like what was it like? It was like a red carpet. I can't remember if it was like the announcement for this fight where him, Wardley, and like Adelaide's kind of team got into an altercation and Wardley got cut. So there was talk of, you know, this fight maybe not going ahead due to the cut healing and stuff like that. You know, luckily it did, because going into this card, I think this was the fight that everyone was looking forward to, because a lot of people thought, you know, Fury and Ngannou was going to be very one-sided. So, yeah, good fight. I thought, you know, Adelaide started well first couple of rounds. I probably thought he took those. Wardley kind of warmed up into it and managed to stop him. The last round was pretty entertaining to watch. If you go back, I know a lot of people thought maybe the referee stopped it a little bit too early because Adelaide was kind of throwing back, but he did look out on his feet. And then Adelaide did, you know, kind of like push the referee and kind of punched him, kind of gave him like a little bit of a body shot. So I'm sure he'll be in trouble for that. But looking at Wardley, going from like a white collar boxer in the UK to now being British Commonwealth champion, unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. You know, anything going forward from now, it really is just a bonus. You know, to go from there to winning the British and Commonwealth, unbelievable achievement for the guy. And
does he have what it takes to get to the top, to win at the top?
No, he's too small, unfortunately. I think he's too small of a heavyweight to get up there. You know, to be like a smaller heavyweight, like an Usyk, you just have to be like unbelievable. You know, Usyk has the footwork and his combinations and his boxing IQ kind of makes up for his lack of size and power at times. And Wardley doesn't really fight like that. Wardley kind of, a lot of Wardley's fights, he's not necessarily doing that great. And then he kind of catches a shot. He kind of sees red and then just comes in and kind of manages to win like that sort of way. And I think at the top level of a heavyweight, he's going to be too small. And I think that's just not going to work for him. I think he's too small, not strong enough and stuff like that to fight some of these, you know, literal giants in the heavyweight division. But looking at what he's achieved so far is unbelievable. I'm sure if you turn around and told him at the start of his white collar fights, like, hey, you're going to be, you know, several years from now, you're going to be British heavyweight champion, he would snatch your hand off.
Yeah, probably. Also on the card, Joseph Parker gets the third round KO over Simon Keen. This is for the IBF and WBO Intercontinental Heavyweight titles. And then Martin Bacoli gets the 20th win of his career with the fourth round TKO over Carlos Takam, also in another heavyweight matchup. This whole card was a heavyweight undercard and everything, huh? I mean, I got to give it to them. Like, hey, you know, just make it all heavyweights. So,
like Don King back in the day.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Yeah, so I understand. And also this past weekend from the Polo Forum Benito Juarez in Cancun, Mexico, on DAZN, Oshaki Foster gets the 12th round TK over Rocky Hernandez. This is for the WBC super featherweight title. Round of the year. Very, very tense moments, dramatic moments. Talk to us about it, Mike. What'd you think?
Definitely the fight of the weekend. Obviously flew under the radar because of the huge event going out in Saudi, but this fight was unbelievable. Round 11, if you get a chance, go back. I'm sure DAZN are very, very good at sticking on replays of fights, highlights of fights. Go back and watch round 11. Watch round 11, watch round 12, just the last two rounds, and you get some really, really good action. Oshaki Foster comes in as obviously the champion facing, you know, the hard-hitting Rocky Hernandez. Rocky probably wins the majority of the rounds. I would say Shaki's probably down on the cards going into the 12th, has to get the knockout, and he manages to do it. Great performance from him. I thought Rocky Hernandez looked really good. Just unfortunate, really, that it flew under the radar from everybody. And then also go on BoxRec and check out the scorecards. Some absolutely unbelievable scorecards from the referee, from the judges, sorry. One of them has Rocky Hernandez winning every single round. Another one has it scored, I think, to Shaki Foster. The other one has it like super close. So really just goes to show you, you know, what boxing is like with scorecards like that, you know, coming out of Mexico. But, you know, luckily we didn't need to go to them, which is the good thing, right? We got a knockout victory. So luckily we didn't have to go to the scorecards because, yeah, definitely those scorecards would have been a little bit crazy.
Yeah, you got to give it to Oshaki Foster, like, right at the last second. He's like, nah, I got to figure it out. And he got the stoppage win. So, yeah, man, it's dramatic. You know, dramatic, a lot of drama unfolding throughout the fight. I got to check it out. I saw some photos and stuff, but I haven't actually seen the fight. So I'm going to try to catch it back, especially those last two rounds, 11 and 12. Seems like they were pretty, pretty exciting. Moving on to fight previews, this upcoming Saturday, the 4th of November, from the Tahoe Blue Event Center in Lake Tahoe, Nevada, on ESPN Plus, a new location, you know, Top Rank testing out new spots, huh? Raymond Murataya, 18-0, goes up against Diego Torres Nunez, 18-0. Identical records, both undefeated? That's interesting. You know, you never know. What did Robert Diaz, we talked about earlier with Rocha and Santillan? You know, these unknown undefeated guys, sometimes that's pretty dangerous. So we will see on that. And also on that card, Efe Ajagba, 18-1, goes up against Joseph Goodall, 10-1-1. This is on ESPN Plus this upcoming Saturday from Lake Tahoe, Nevada. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Keyshawn Davis has received a 90-day suspension from the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation that was backdated to his October 14th fight in Rosenberg, Texas. That fight, originally scored as a majority decision for Davis, was now changed to a no decision. He'll be eligible to compete again on January 12th. I believe this was first reported by, he's been on the show before, Box Rec Gray, who works with the Box Rec site. I know it was reported elsewhere, but I believe we saw him with the information first. So credit to him. What do you think about this? The report was that it was for marijuana that was found in him. It is still illegal in Texas. Even in California, at least with the Athletic Commission, I think the Athletic Commission, because it did go up to like the California Supreme Court in terms of like employment. Just because it is legal in California, there is still a gray area with like employers and employment. And I know there was a press release when it happened, when the California Supreme Court ruled on something, because the CSAC and Andy Foster released a press release saying, you know, oh yeah, we saw the ruling, but it still kind of gave them, the California State Athletic Commission, some type of authority to discipline a fighter who has marijuana in their system or something like that. So just because it's legal in California doesn't mean that the Athletic Commission still doesn't have some type of authority to discipline you. So, you know, that's something, if you're a fighter out there or a team, look into that. Just because it's legal somewhere, it doesn't mean that respective authority in the Athletic Commission still can't discipline you. There is some type of a decision there where they have some authority. And in Texas, it's completely illegal still. So, you know, how do we look at this? Do we look at this as unprofessionalism, or, you know, marijuana is obviously a hot topic in the United States, all around the world, but especially in the United States. There's people criticizing that, like, you know, it doesn't affect performance and all that, but it's still illegal regardless. So is it on Davis for not being professional enough, or is it, you know, what are we looking at here? What do you think?
I mean, it depends. Why is he taking it? Is he taking it for a medical reason? You know, is it for like back pain? Is it for, you know, something, you know, like a mental, something like that he feels that he needs it, you know, for like anxiety or something like that? Then just look into it. You know, if you know that you're going to fight in California, if you're going to know you're going to fight in Texas, New York, then obviously look at the rules. You know, Davis is an Olympian. He fights for Top Rank. I'm sure he's probably got a team of people. You know, surely Top Rank can probably tell him, like, hey, you're going to be fighting in this area. You know, these rules are different to your usual fights in like Nevada or you know, California, stuff like that. So yeah, you know, I would think it was a little bit lazy on his team's side, you know, for not looking into that. If they know that, you know, Davis, you know, smokes marijuana on a regular, or if, you know, takes gummies or whatever it is that, you know, he tested positive for, then yeah, you need to have a look at the rules, especially for someone like Davis and his potential. I think a lot of people probably see him as a future world champion, or at least, you know, he's going to be challenging for that. And, you know, he's going to be fighting all around America. He's going to be potentially fighting all around the world. So he needs to look at these things, you know, before doing it. You know, if he's earning enough money, then get yourself a sidekick, you know, get yourself a right-hand man that can look into these things for you. Or, you know, Top Rank should maybe be informing him of these things. Because, yeah, like you said, you know, unfortunately, not every commission is the same. And these are things that he needs to look at. And after this, I'm sure he will be looking at it, you know, because he actually had he was supposed to be fighting Pedraza, I think it was December 9th. And obviously that fight, I'm sure, is going to get, you know, probably put back until January now, rearranged for sometime next year, you know, due to this faux pas, shall we say, on his behalf.
Right, right. Yeah. So it is what it is, man. But, you know, this is what happened. You know, it got changed to no decision on his record. So, yeah, it is what it is, man.
It's a short career. You know, if he's just taking, you know, marijuana just for recreational, dude, you've got 10 years of solid performances, solid of your career. Once you get to 35, 40, whatever age you start to retire, smoke all you want. Smoke all you want. You've got 10 years to make generational life-changing money for you and your family because he is that good. Put that down, or, you know, if it's just for that reason, if it's not a medical reason, then smoke away. Once you get to 35, 40, you can do what the hell you want with all that money. You're going to have, he's got the chance to make fuck you money, dude. You know what I mean? He can right. do whatever right. he wants because he's that good.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like, if promoters don't want to deal with this, like, they're like, hey, I mean, it's not that they don't know that marijuana is illegal in the state of Texas or other states. Then don't take the fights to Texas. Don't do it. I mean, obviously it's a little bit more business friendly in terms of putting fights over there, and you get to take home a little bit more money for your fighters and you as a company and all that. So a lot of fights go to Texas, but you know, if that's happening and you're worried about that because you know these fights are going to change or whatever, then don't put fights there. You know, you might have to pay a premium to put them over here in California. But you won't have to really, I mean, you'll still have to worry about it. But obviously the California Commission, the state of California, is going to be a little bit more lax in evaluating something like that than in comparison to the state of Texas. But it is what it is. But like you said, these guys are professionals, man. Like, they should know. And I don't know, maybe Top Rank did tell, like, you know, they give them information on the states. Like, hey, this is what this state does, this is what they require, this is illegal, blah blah blah. You know, we can't say that they do or they don't, because we don't know. But you would think they've been around for so long, they're pretty professional. You know, they got a good thing going on over there with Top Rank, you know, very organized company. But yeah, like you said, look at Canelo Alvarez. You know, he's obviously a perfect example of discipline. You know, he for every fight, every fighter, yeah, you know, they're always showing him, you know, training. I mean, when's the last time you really seen his training regimen that drastically different from one fight to the next? It doesn't matter who it is, whether it was Avni Yildirim, Billy Joe Saunders, Triple G, or Dimitri Bivol. His discipline factor and his level is always very high. You know, like, he trains for everybody at a high level. Because he knows, you know, and if you want to get to that level and you want to sustain that position, you got to do that. You got to do that as a professional. And it doesn't matter if it's boxing, MMA, baseball, football, whatever, basketball, it doesn't matter, golf or whatever it is, you have to sustain that level. You're a professional. That's what it is, you know.
Look at the Michael Jordan documentary. If you want to see someone who's that successful and still driven, look at that. That's a good example.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Even Kobe Bryant, you know, there's, you know, it's the same thing. Yeah, all these guys, LeBron James, all that, that's how they stay at that level. Cause I think I read somewhere LeBron James spends like $1 million a year on like his body, like nutrition and training and all that stuff. Like that's an investment into, cause that's what makes him his money, you know? And he's like almost 40 years old and he's still better than like 95% of the whole league, who's like 25 years old or something like that. So, you know, that shows you, man, that shows you, but you know, it is what it is. He'll be back. Like you said, he's a very talented guy and he'll be back and he'll, hopefully he learns from this and, you know, every state that they fight in, hopefully they figure out the rules beforehand. So there won't be any subsequent news like this. The UFC's Jorge Masvidal says he's going to be coming back soon in a boxing match sometime next year on, who knows what it's going to be on, but I'm not surprised about this. All these guys are jumping into boxing because they're trying to get a cut. Maybe go to Saudi Arabia or Abu Dhabi. Like, all these guys are spending money left and right. Maybe I can get a cut, you know, especially with the comparison between MMA pay and boxing. So that's not surprising at all. And then one thing that's obviously been news for a couple weeks now, I did do an interview with a digital producer, Jay Chandri, about 2 weeks ago. When this news happened, Showtime has announced officially that they will be going out of the sports business, not just boxing, but the Showtime sports will be shutting down. People will be let go. That whole division will be shut down. Steven Espinoza will be out. Me and you haven't talked about this since it's happened, since it is significant news. You know, HBO and Showtime were the two staples. What's your reaction to this, Mike? What do you think?
I mean, it's sad, obviously. You know, Showtime was one of the better productions, really. You know, them and HBO were obviously the two biggest in terms of like name and history in boxing over here in the US. But I think the writing had been on the wall for some time, unfortunately, because it just seemed like, you know, people that are in the boxing sphere, just some of the purses that like PBC were paying and putting on Showtime just didn't make sense, because you'd go to the events and there'd be like hardly anybody there. They'd be giving out hundreds and thousands of tickets. And you're just like, how are these guys like getting these purses for these fights when they're not even selling out? It was just, you know, it's like PBC were just taking the money for Showtime. They're like, all right, we've got a guaranteed purse, so don't care about anything else. Don't care about the promotion. Don't care about selling tickets, because we've made our money. You know, Showtime can do that, but that's not their job. You know, their job was really just to broadcast the show, where, you know, PBC really should have been pushing the tickets and stuff like that. You know, all of the commercial side of it. So yeah, you could just see that type of relationship that they had just didn't work financially. And I'm sure, you know, Showtime looked at that, you know, when they were taken over, and I'm sure, unfortunately, the boxing side was probably leaking money, apart from the odd, you know, Davis and Garcia, you know, pay-per-view, I'm sure made them, you know, some healthy cash, you know, and some other events, you know, possibly the Canelo fights probably did, you know, super well as,
touching on that, because I asked Jay Chandri on that in my interview with him. You know, Espinoza was talking about, Steven Espinoza, the executive vice president of Showtime Sports, was, you know, talking about that in the lead up to whatever the last fight was. It might have been the Canelo fight. I think it was a Canelo fight, where he was saying, oh, we've done $20 million gates the last three events or whatever it was, you know, Canelo, Brian Garcia, Tank Davis, and all that. And he's saying, like, Dana White and UFC have never touched $20 million and all that. But we've been told, and obviously we've seen reports, and we've been told by people in the industry that, and I asked Jay Chandri the same thing, you know, just because you're making that gate, like, are you getting all that money? You know, you're paying your fighters a ton of money. A lot of money is going to, like, for example, Canelo's getting a big cut, you know. And then the pay-per-view, you know, people who buy directly on satellite and all that stuff, which I think is still very prevalent in terms of, you know, buying digital still. I think satellite and all that on TV, cable and all that stuff is still very prominent. Half of that goes to the distributors, you know. So what do you think about that? You know, they parading these $20 million gates and all that, but are you really seeing a majority of the percentage of that money?
That'd probably depend on the contract they have, right? Because the rumor was when Mayweather was at his biggest, he got a cut of that as well. You buy a hot dog, you know, yeah, at the arena, and a percentage of that hot dog was also going to Mayweather's pocket. So
how powerful, like, you got to give it to him, man. Regardless of what, he's obviously an excellent fighter, a legendary fighter, but in terms of business, that's how powerful he got, where he's like, nope, I want a cut of everything that happens in this building on this day. Like, that is power. That is power. I mean, who knows if De La Hoya and those guys, Pacquiao, like, maybe if they did that. I've never heard of it. They might have, especially De La Hoya, but the fact that Mayweather got a cut, that is ridiculously powerful.
Yeah, because you're looking at maybe what Canelo maybe has that power where he can say, like, hey, I want a percentage of everything that comes through the door, because these people aren't coming through the door if I'm not here. So it's going to be interesting. But no, like you said, I don't see, like, you know, $20 million gate, like, they're not getting all of that. And then obviously, like, the pay-per-views and stuff like that. And then when you're paying some of the purses, like a Canelo purse and some of those guys, they're going to have to be making crazy amounts of money just to take home, say, like, a profit of like a couple of million. You know, that's right. It's a high risk if you're thinking about it, because it's not guaranteed, because the pay-per-views are so up and down, and with injuries and other sporting events in the US, like, you have to pick a perfect weekend and stuff like that to put on a pay-per-view event. It's a risk. It really is a risk. So I'm sure that Showtime have looked at that and thought, we're risking all of this money that we could put into, like, documentaries, a cool TV series and stuff like that, which is probably guaranteed money, over the risk. They probably thought it's not worthwhile. It's not worthwhile for them. So I can kind of, like, understand why they're pulling out. Sadly, because it's, right, another one lost. And, you know, it looks like they're going to all be on apps. You know, we're going to be on, like, ESPN Plus, DAZN, Amazon Prime is probably going to come in some sort of way eventually, you know, whether the PBC managed to get a deal with them. That's the future. You know, like people have been saying for many years, that is the future.
Yeah, the market is correcting itself. That's what happened. It's just like any industry, you know, whether it's real estate, the car market, or anything like that. At least here in the United States, like, there's always the bubble goes up and then it eventually pops. Like, I mean, it sucks when it's happening, but, like, you know, eventually what goes up must come down. What goes down goes up, like, sideways and all that. So yeah, it's the market's correcting itself. And Eddie Hearn said in an interview after the Showtime announcement that he's like if we have fighters who start rejecting fights and all that, he's like, we're going to release them. We're going to part ways. And, you know, maybe that's good. You know, the market needs to correct itself to sustain some type of business viability for the sport, essentially. So, you know, because we don't see the fights that we want to see because, you know, the financial demands are too high, and it's just, and then the return on investment isn't going to pan out. And yeah, it's an interesting time right now. 2024 is definitely going to be an interesting time. And I'm very interested to see where Al Haymon is going to strike a deal. Cause obviously he's going to lead with, hey, I have Canelo fighting, that whoever he's pitching it to, whether it's Amazon, DAZN, or whoever. I don't think he's going to go DAZN. It'd be crazy if he does, but I don't think he's going to go to DAZN. He's going to use their offer to leverage some other one, but I'd be surprised if he goes to DAZN. That's what he's leveraging with. Like, hey, I have a Canelo fight coming up in May. I have a Tank Davis fight coming up. And then what? I don't know. He probably has somebody else that he can... Spence Crawford. So he has three fights that he's... That's what he's using in his pitch. He's like, hey, look, these fights are all, this one made this, one made that. These are going to be popular fights. He's like, this is what you want. But
Pacquiao did that interview this weekend saying he's interested at Javonte Davis at 147.
Imagine, yeah, that was pretty big. I give credit to Fight Hub and Marcos Villegas on that, for getting that tidbit. So that was big. So hey, I could see it. It sucks for us, Espinoza and Showtime, because they're like, man, I wish he would have said that a long time ago. We would have tried to make that fight, because they would have. They would have tried to made it. But now Heyman is going to be like, oh, man, like, I need to capitalize on that. Because Davis needs, I mean, I'm sure they're having a difficult time right now in trying to find an opponent, because you're coming off a Ryan Garcia fight, which is the most popular fight for Tank Davis. And obviously, they did well on the pay-per-view performance. But you can't go fight an Isaac Cruz or something like that, or a Rolly Romero after a Ryan Garcia. You just can't. You know, you got to try to fight the high level guys, and, you know, try to fight somebody who tried to bring something to the table, not only competitively, but from the business side as well. So yeah, I'm really interested to see where Heyman goes, because there's not too many players out there, and boxing has showed these other broadcasters like what it is. So these other broadcasters are all familiar with seeing how it works from the financial side. So I don't think PBC and Al Heyman have a ton of leverage in terms of getting what they want from the finance side, but he does have leverage in terms of what he's pitching with the next Davis fight, the Canelo fight, Spence Crawford. So, because somebody's going to pick that up. Somebody will pick that up. It's just a question of who. We'll see. It's going to be interesting to see in the next couple months or so. So I think we'll hear something, what, maybe December, January, about that. That's what I would think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been a while, isn't it? So, and I can't see where else to go. If I was them, you got to look at Amazon Prime, really. And if Amazon even just offer you a deal, it's kind of worth taking it, right? Because it's huge. Yeah. I can't think of anywhere else you'd want to go. You know,
I don't see them
joining forces with Golden Boy and Matchroom at DAZN.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't see that at all. You know, I'm sure Heyman's talking to them, but I don't see that happening. But unless they just know nobody else likes the deal and he goes with DAZN. So, I mean, for boxing fans, that'd be great, because you have three of the major promoters under one roof. And DAZN's going to be like, hey, you guys have to work together. Like, that'd be great for boxing fans. That'd be awesome. But I don't think that's going to happen. But we'll see. We will see. But once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. We went through some stuff for the last couple of weeks. Hopefully we caught you up and you got caught up on the news and notes, previews and reviews and analysis of this sport of boxing. But before we go, once again, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week, where we'll be looking forward to Ernesto Mercado against Jeremiah Nakathia, and also Shakur Stevenson against Edwin De Los Santos, which is actually a Thursday night fight due to Formula One being in Las Vegas.
Oh, yeah. F1 showing up in Las Vegas. I wonder how that's going to pan out. So for once again, guys, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.